Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I'm the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we will discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Typewriter Talks began in April 2020 and ran through March 2021 in response to COVID as an online chat and spanned 39 episodes, which can be found on our Keep St. Pete Lit YouTube channel. After taking a break to regroup, we decided to return as a podcast. Today, we are happy to welcome Nathan Van Koops. Nathan lives in St. Petersburg, Florida, on a diet comprised mainly of tacos. When not tinkering on old airplanes, he writes heroic adventure stories that explore imaginative new worlds. He is the author of the time travel adventure series In Time Like These and Paradox PI, as well as the Skylighter Adventures. His Reacher series, Kingdom of Engines, explores a swashbuckling alternative history where the modern and the medieval collide. Welcome, Nathan.
Thank you for having me, Maureen. It's great to be here.
Thank you for being here. We have interviewed you a couple times for a wide variety of things. You are, I tell people you're like one of our most loyal literary people.
Keep St. Pete Lit, ride or die.
Oh my God, I love that. That's great. So tell us what you're working on right now.
Interestingly, I'm actually doing a departure from my usual. I typically write science fiction. My bread and butter has been time travel adventure specifically. I have 2 4-book series that way, but I'm actually right now writing an aviation mystery thriller, which is new for me, but I've had a career in aviation for over 20 years. And it finally made sense to me to write a novel that actually used that knowledge and experience. And I thought, you know what, I think it's finally time. And it's been interesting I'm setting a mystery in St. Pete at our local downtown airport, Albert Whitted Airport. And it's been a lot of fun being able to use, you know, our local city again as a starting point. I did set my time travel series here as well, but it's been great having a contemporary story that's taking place here in the city as well. So there's lots of inspiration and I'm really enjoying it.
What do you think took you so long to like write about the obvious, you know, since you've had a 20-year career in that? Did you not feel ready
I think part of it is that when you're juggling multiple things, when you're a writer, but you're also doing other things. I had this career in aviation, but I've been writing as well. So those kind of dual identities were important to me for a while. And they didn't really cross over because I think aviation is such a different part of my brain where mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's checklists and it's flying yeah. and it's doing things by regulations. And it's a different type of mental work. Whereas the creative outlet of writing was a way for me to escape that, to kind of just let my brain free and run. And it often ran far exotic places like the future and the past and science fictional worlds. And so I think some things changed with my career a little bit where I just sort of reached a point in my aviation career where it's just been very relaxed and I'm just very established there now. And I think that it has become a little less stressful.
Yeah.
And it's become somewhere where I'm just comfortable also writing now. And like where my brain has sort of melded those two parts of me together a little bit better. And creatively, I was ready to tackle it. And I joke around, like, why has it taken me so long to, I've been writing, you know, books for over 10 years now. And like, why has it taken me so long to write a book in the field I'm in? But it's fun. It's nice for me to be tackling that at this particular, we'll see how it goes and see how many books I write in this series. I don't know. Right now it's one, but there might be a series. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, because you typically write in a series. Why are you drawn to do writing that way?
Well, I've learned, I mean, I like writing as a creative outlet, but I also like to write to make money. And it's very gratifying to actually write books that sell and become popular and people talk about them. And it's important, I think, to write in series these days, because especially as an indie writer like myself, it's hard to find much traction with one book and it's hard to market one book. Whereas if you have a series of books, let's say you've got 4 or 6 or 8 books in a series, you can spend your advertising dollars on book one. And then as long as people are hooked by your writing, they go on to read book 2, 3, 4. So that read through helps you to capitalize on the investment. So if you're someone, especially if you have a limited budget, you know, you only have so much advertising dollars to spend, then it's nice to be able to only have to invest it on one book, book one in a series, as opposed to having to invest separate advertising in every book. And it just makes more sense to write in a series. And people also love to come back to a world. And if you write in, especially a mystery series, mystery very much lends itself to episodic content, where the detective doesn't usually change that much. The main hero impacts the world around them, and he or she is kind of a catalyst for change, but they themselves stay relatively static. They're what's called a flat arc character. And so each new problem that they encounter, they have an impact on that. But people enjoy, as a reader, coming back to the same location. Maybe it's the same small town that you're writing in, or maybe it's the just the character that you're enjoying who's quirky, like Columbo or somebody like that, where they have a style that you just enjoy being around. They're a character you like being around. Maybe you have a whole cast of characters that the readers enjoy being around. So every time they pick up a book, it feels like coming home. And they don't care what the mystery is. They don't care who died and who did it, really. I mean, they will. They'll read to the end of the book because they want to know the whodunit aspect of the story. But the reason they pick up the next book is because they're hooked on your characters.
Yeah, so there's that combination of stability, but then there's the novelty of the mystery, which is in many like self-help podcasts I've listened to, like, we need both. We need to feel safe and stable in life, but we also want the new. We want the adventure. We want the exciting. Even in a romance, you know, you've got the love, but then you've got the desire. So that's really interesting to like show that that's what readers, why readers keep reading books. I know I grew up on Anne of Green Gables and Laura Ingalls Wilder. And, you know, it was the same two girl characters that you followed through all these adventures. And I was hooked. And then I identified with them. And that's interesting because I never, ever thought of it like that. Like it was, there's a reason why I like their spunkiness and their fieriness, and, you know, they were unconventional and they didn't necessarily fit in with their family unit, but their family unit loved them and they had all these adventures. So that was, that's really fascinating to.
And if you look at the new generation of readers who has come up, you're reading, you know, Harry Potter and things like that. The reason why, I think one of the reasons why Harry Potter was so massively successful wasn't because of the plots, even though they're well-written. It's because you have this insular little family inside a family dynamic. And every book, you know, you're going to get to go back to Hogwarts. You're going to go back to this place that you've learned, and you learn new things about the same people. And you grow into a relationship. You build a relationship with a place, a fictional place in a book, and with these fictional characters. But it's that stability that you're talking about just brings us home each time. And people would read, you know, 10 more Harry Potter books if they could, because we're just ready to go back there because J.K. Rowling did such an amazing job of building a place we want to be.
Yeah. And it's funny because I just saw that they're doing more Twilight movies.
Oh, are they?
With the first, I think the first director, because the first Twilight movie, I know this is different than a book, but the first Twilight movie had such a like, pure gothic vibe to it, and then they got all, you know, big money put in, but they're going back. I think her name's Stephanie Hardwick. I'm not sure. I could be wrong about the name of the director, but they're coming back to her to reboot the series because people want more of it. So it's so fascinating. You know, like Fast and Furious 10.
Right.
The same characters that you know and love, but then they're driving cars and crashing, but you know, the Fast and Furious 10's coming out. It's just so funny. That's so fascinating. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's one of the reasons why I'm also kind of writing something contemporary now is that I realized that from a marketing standpoint, people, because I've written a lot of very original content before, and like some of the side series I've written were very unique, and I couldn't find anything else like them if I tried, because they're these unusual genre mashups or blends of things that would only exist in my book, and they don't exist anywhere else because I made them up. From a marketing standpoint, that's very challenging because people don't like to read. People, we think we want to read new and different, but we really don't. That's not the actual average reader's relationship with stories. They pick up a book and they say, I want to read another one like this one.
Yeah.
But different. They want to read the same, but different. So that's why so much of the supermarket shelves, you go and look and you see these romance novels that look identical, but more or less they're the same color schemes. It's still, you know, the woman in a dress, and it's the Duke over here with her, you know, like in the over the next book over, but he's a baron. You know, I mean, it's just these very minor changes, but romance readers are the most ravenous readers in the world, and they'll just consume massive amounts of content because even though they know that it's a happily ever after, they know they're going to get together at the end. There's not a lot of mystery to it. But it's the how. It's the how will this happen? And I think it's same thing with mysteries. I think we know that the murder will be solved at the end.
Yeah.
We may not know who did it, but we know it will be. It will be solved. And it's we're showing up to solve the puzzle with our characters. We want to go on the journey. It's not just a solution. We want to go on the journey. And I think the important thing about writing is to just make it a really pleasurable journey, no matter what you're writing.
Yeah, as a person who's watched pretty much every single romance movie that ever came out, and it's the same exact formula. It's like the last 10 minutes. Oh, they broke up, but you know they'll get back together. It's like, it's the journey. You want to go on the journey with these characters. And I love that. Thank you. This is all really good advice for people, especially like bringing in, like you said, you were very open. I wanted a book that would sell. Like you were a lot of, you know, that was a very open way of saying, look, this was, you know, I want to write, I enjoy writing, but I also want to write something that sells. And that, I love that.
And that's one of the things that I think if I were to go back in time, and it was a, you know, I enjoyed the journey I've been on, and I've written the books that I've loved and wanted to write. But from a marketing standpoint, if I wanted to give myself marketing advice from 10 years ago, I did something on accident that set me up for success, is that my very first book, I wrote a time travel book, and it was just strictly a time travel book, even though time travel is a subgenre of sci-fi and it's a relatively small niche. It was dead center right in the middle of what time travel readers wanted. They said they wanted an adventure story that was all about time travel. And I delivered that. And the entire reason I have a writing career right now is because I delivered something that the readers wanted. And I continue to write more books in that series. And even though I'm a better writer now, I've written many more books, and you know my craft has improved. It's hard to beat just landing dead center in the middle of a genre and just giving readers exactly what they want in a relatively popular genre. So the other books that I've written, for example, like my Kingdom of Vengeance series, where it's like this sort of modern medieval mashup, where it's like knights driving cars. It's interesting. It's fun. I think it's, I had a blast writing it. People that read it really enjoy it. But it's, like I said, it's this corner, this really small niche inside, you know, where two Venn diagrams meet, where people aren't shopping. But people are not shopping for a modern medieval adventure story with Arthurian knights driving, you know, muscle cars. That's not something people are shopping for. So even though it's a blast and it's absolutely super fun when people do stumble across it, from a marketing standpoint, it's much easier to look at a genre that you enjoy in this case, I'm writing, going to start writing mystery thriller, which is going to be a pure mystery thriller. It's going to have aviation in it, but it's going to be, you know, pretty much right in the middle of a genre, contemporary mystery thriller, which is very popular. And I'm going to just write to the readers that are there, and it's going to sell. And I'm very confident that it will sell long term, because historically these books have always sold. So it'll be much easier to market, because there's a lot of other books similar to it. So when you turn around and want to advertise it, you can actually have Amazon sales pages you could run ads to that make sense or that will convert. There's a lot of benefits to it that I didn't realize when I was first starting out, that how important it was to understand your genre, to write to a genre that actually has enough readers for you to make a living at, and to continue to deliver content that they want, and market it in a way that it attracts the right readers. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make early on is that they believe that their book is going to be read by everyone, which is not true. And it's absolutely not what you want. You don't want to sell your book to everyone. You want to sell your book to the right people who read that type of book all the time. I know we've done some classes for Keep St. Pete Lit over the years. And
that's we need to do some new ones. Yeah,
we do. Yeah. And one of the first things I always tell people is, you know, one of the worst mistakes you can make from a marketing standpoint is to tell all of your friends and family that you wrote a book, because all of your friends and family love you and they're going to go out and buy your book. And then Amazon, which is a, you know, a learning machine, is going to be like, well, who buys this book? And it's going to be, you know, Aunt Susie and Uncle Theo over there and cousin Chris all bought this book. Like, what do these people have in common? And they have nothing. The only thing they have in common is you. And so it's going to try to sell. It's going to try to sell your book to people that are like cousin Chris and Uncle Leo. And it's not going to figure out. It's not going to know the key. It's not going to have the key to this puzzle. Whereas if you sell your book initially and you don't tell all your friends and family, and you say, you know, I'm going to just do my best to write a book that's right to the heart of a genre, and I'm going to market it to other people that I know like this type of book. Maybe you've got friends of who are other authors in that genre, and you've set up some sort of mailing list swap or something that you can at least get your footing in. And if you sell 50 or 100 books to the right people first, to people who actually read in this genre, then Amazon, this learning algorithm, is like, oh, people who like contemporary romance like this book. Therefore, I will turn around and try to sell it to more people that like contemporary romance. And sure enough, those people also like it. And then it will go on to become successful. As opposed to just, you know, immediately shooting yourself in the foot right out of the gate by writing a book and then blasting it out to everyone and saying, hey, everyone, I wrote a book, please buy my book. And then just, you know, accidentally tanking your marketing efforts from day one. And those are some of the things that you don't think about when you're first starting out that you learn later. And you think, oh, okay, it makes sense. As soon as you think about it, you're like, oh, that actually makes perfect sense. But we're just so excited. Of course, when we're first starting out, we're just so thrilled to actually make it to the end of the book that we
want everyone to know.
But it does pay off to be a little bit patient.
Yeah, I feel that with everything in life, slow and steady. Mm-hmm. I think that's always the way. And also, like, it's they say, you know, big splash when you come out of the gate. But my thing is like, no, do a small splash, because then you can kind of make mistakes in private and fix stuff. And then once you kind of get the... when you get your, you know, sea legs, as we would call it, and here in Florida, you you kind of have your, excuse me, shit together, and then you're not just like making all these mistakes in public, and you can tweak things and change things, and
and everyone thinks that they want their first book to be a massive success, but the problem with that is that there's nowhere for your readers to go. If they finish your book, you're like, wow, that was great. What else have you got? You're like, well, nothing. You know, as opposed to if you do write something amazing and then they finish it and close the cover and be like, hey, I want to look up this author and see what else they have. And then they find that you've already written 10 other books and then think, oh, well, I'm going to go read those. So
It's the wait. I always love it when I kind of discover something a little late and then there's already like a whole, like, I'm like, oh, this whatever has been out for 4 years, 2 years, 3 years. And oh, there's all these... you know, oh, I want the next. It's here. Oh, I want the next. It's already here. Mm-hmm. So there, and, but there's also like that, if you have this early, I never wanted to have like early success because then you always kind of have to eclipse that and eclipse that and eclipse that and that instead of like naturally growing into yourself, I think. But everybody's different. Not to those that have early success, not to discredit you at all.
Sure. Yeah. It's not the worst problem to have in the world.
But no,
it can give you, readers, but it can also be a problem where your readers forget about you. It, you know, takes you a while to write your next book. And by that point they've moved on. So it is something to think about. And that's why some people do write multiple books before they even release them. And then they'll, you know, or rapid release, that sort of thing, where they'll put one out every few months after they've already got all three in the series done or something like that. There's a lot of strategies to kind of, forestall that problem. Mm-hmm. But it all starts with just writing a good book and then writing another good book. And
so do
just
you
keeping at it.
Do you plan out your books in the same way that you plan out your marketing? Like, are you somebody that starts the book and then you just allow the book to lead you? Or do you already have it like outlined and planned out and you hit certain points along the way? It's a pantser, fly by the seat of your pants is the term I've heard, and then or a plotter. You more of a panther.
I try very hard to be a plotter, and because I find that I need guideposts. Mm. And even when I do it, though, I do start writing, and this is my most recent book, you know, 20 some odd thousand words into it, maybe 30,000 words into it, and I realized that I still need to stop and rewrite the plot. So even though I did outline and I did have guideposts, I usually get to the middle and things start to get a little fuzzy, and I realize I didn't outline well enough, or that the characters have taken me a place naturally where they want to go is slightly different, or if I haven't quite figured out the twist ending properly, something like that, then I will usually stop and then kind of reorient and get my compass back out and make sure I'm still pointing this the right direction, and then continue on. And that's, I just came out of that phase recently in the last few weeks with the book I'm writing. And they talk about, like, if you're going to try to get from, you know, Florida to Michigan, and you just sort of start driving, maybe you'll eventually get there. But if you actually make the roadmap in advance and actually follow a few guide points and say, hey, I'm going to hit this city, this city, this city, you get there quicker and it's more efficient, and you might even have a better time, and you don't get lost sort of like wandering around in Georgia somewhere because you just sort of aimed vaguely north and like hoped to hit it. So it's very similar with writing. You can just start writing and head in the general direction you want to go. Just understand that you may have some wandering around in the woods times, and you may have to stop and figure out your guideposts. Even though you might think of yourself as a pantser, you're still writing to a structure. Every story has a structure. Every story has basic things that we expect to see, and you know them because as a reader, we've consumed so many stories and so much content that we understand the way a story functions. You could write a romance novel because you've consumed so many romance stories. You know that that dark moment of the soul where they break up has to be there because it's expected. And if you don't put those things in there, if you don't give us the happy ending, if you don't give us the down and out part, we don't like the story. And like, we may not, the average reader may not be able to define exactly why they didn't like it. But I remember watching some film one time, and it was, might've been Ocean's 8 or something like that. It was, I remember they did Ocean's 11, but it was an all female cast and they did it over again. And I think they treated it with kid gloves because these women never had any problems. Like everything went right for them the entire way through the film. And I kept waiting, like, okay, where does this plan fail? Like where is their down and out point where they like, they missed something, or like the enemy was stronger than them and they had to regroup and recover and dig deep and like come back and overcome whatever problem it was that they had in their group dynamics. So whatever I was expecting, it just never materialized. They just kept doing everything they planned to do. And at the end of the movie, they win. And I was just like, it was so unsatisfying for me as a film. Cause I'm like, yeah, I expect them to win at the end. Yes, I expect them to pull off the heist or whatever it is, but I needed them to suffer. It's like people have the same issue with the newer Star Wars films where Rey as a character is a wonderful character, but never struggles. Everything just comes to her naturally, and she never has to. Like, we followed the original Star Wars films because we related to Luke, where we saw him going through this journey where he had to like go run through the jungle carrying Yoda on his shoulders and do all this training and practice and fail and practice and fail. Because we relate to people who fail, because we fail.
Yeah.
Every time we try something, we practice, we fail. We get back up again, we fail. We watch Rocky because he gets beat up and goes down and gets back up again. That we relate to that. If you give your characters too much success and you never beat up on them, you never show us what they're made of. We just assume that they're boring. It's like Superman. They always say that about Superman's boring because he's just too perfect at everything. That's his biggest flaw, is that he's too perfect. So it's like you have to think about the down and out parts of your story and make sure that you follow, even if you're pantsing, you need to make sure you hit the right notes along the way. You probably know what those are, and your characters may naturally find them, but know in the back of your head what a story looks like. And if it's not working, there's a good chance that you're missing something. You're missing a fundamental element, which I find it's useful to outline that in advance. I'm like, hey, this is what's going to be the midpoint realization. This is what's going to be the twist at the end. This is going to be the fault ending. This is going to be the final conclusion. And this is where my ending image is going to reflect my opening image. And I know those things going into any story. And people who start out writing books sometimes worry about hemming themselves in. But in my experience, creativity thrives within limits. You know, painters just don't have an infinite canvas. They pick a size, you know, and they paint within that canvas. And you know, like, you know, if you want to build a fancy house with amazing architecture, you still needs walls, still needs a roof. You can't just open the front door and have the whole thing cave in on you. So like there are basic bones to things, even creative things, that you cannot remove. And you better understand what those bones are, because there's no amount of paint you can put on that house that will make people want to live in it if it's not structurally sound. So it's the same thing with a story. And no matter how you come across it, if it's more intuitive for you and you just make sure you naturally put those things in as you pants your way along, great. But just don't skip them, because otherwise the story is going to cave in on itself and you're going to wonder why. People are going to read it and they're going to have an unsatisfying experience and they're going to wonder why. They may not even know. They'll just be writing a review that says, hey, this book was terrible, or I didn't finish it. And you might be left scratching your head and being like, well, I really enjoyed, you know, wandering around with these characters. But if they didn't do what they were expected to do, if you didn't meet the reader expectations, then you've let them down because you have a job to do as an author. And it's a relationship with your readers, and your readers do have expectations based on the genre you're writing in. But luckily, if you're reading in the genre that you're writing in, if you're fluent in what it is you're doing and you actually understand your genre, you know those things. You know, as a romance reader, that it needs to have a happy ending and it needs to have this, you know, dark night of the soul moment where they break up and get back together. You know they have the meet cute in the beginning. Like, I know as a mystery writer that there's going to be revelations along the way. And that there's going to be these red herrings, and that there's, you know, going to be a satisfying ending, because I've read those books. And that's the most important thing to do, is just read in your genre and make sure you understand what your readers expect of you.
Yeah, and you're talking about that. It comes back to that again, about having that stability and structure, but then also the novelty and the new. And I always say that with people that have kids, I was like, okay, they're like a wild animal, like, give them their boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. This is their little cage, their little boundaries that makes them feel safe, and then let them do whatever the hell they want inside that boundary, because that's how they learn, is through play. And it's the same, like, that's what makes us feel safe. We don't want to just be doing the same thing over and over again, because then you don't grow, because you need the new, and you need the kind of friction to grow and evolve, which is what you're giving your characters. But then you have that consistency, because we are wired for needing that too, because it makes us feel safe. So it's fascinating that You know, I've never heard it like applied to writing like this before, because as a poet, but we have our structure, like we have the structure of a poem, and then we go wild within the structure. And so it's kind of the same thing, except in a more condensed way. So I think it's,
and it gives really you the freedom. It gives you freedom within that structure, because I know that at the end of the story, it's going to be a satisfying story. So it gives me more authority to get creative with the characters. It gets more creative with their personalities or their dialogue or description, whatever it is, the elements that I have, the paint that I'm using on this canvas, in this case, in this story, I can get as creative as I want, because I know that the bones are there, and at the end of this story, readers will be satisfied. They will close the book and be like, ah, yeah, that's what I was looking for. So that it frees you up to be the best version of yourself, and the best writer you can be when you, you know, put those little guideposts in and you hit them. And like I said, you know the structure of a poem, and it's part of that structure that makes it beautiful, because and same thing with writing, you know, like concise writing is harder than, you know, flowery, long-winded writing. You become a better writer. I became a better writer starting writing mystery just because the dialogue is so clipped. Like if you write private detective stories, it's shorter, punchier. Like you're taking 10 word sentences and you're making them into 6 word sentences, 5 word sentences. You're cutting out all unnecessary words, and you're just, you're going straight for the essential. Not that you can't write long sentences, but you have to only use the essential words. And poetry, obviously, you're very much, every word matters. Every single word matters. So, knowing that going in, it makes you a better writer.
And I also thought, you know, like the stability is like, to get very Maureen-y, the stability is like the masculine element. And then you allow the creativity, which is kind of the feminine elements. That's like the yin and the yang in the writing, to have both. And if you have too much, I see that a lot with young poets or even young writers. They just go on and on and on. And I'll say that in our poetry open mic. All right, no manifestos. Like you have three, you think one poem should be 3-4 pages long, but you actually have 10 poems in there. Because then you're not giving the stability. You're just going on and on and on and staying in the creative, in the feminine, I would say. But the masculine gives that container and that stability. But, and of course, my brain's going like, and this is what's wrong with our world right now. We don't have enough balance of these two, but we won't get into that. We're talking about writing. So share us a piece. You've given us so much wonderful, great knowledge. Thank you. We can tell that you're a natural teacher. And I didn't even have to ask any of my questions. You pretty much covered a lot of them, but I love that about you. And I know I'm grateful. So why don't you share a piece of your writing with us?
Sure. I'm going to share an opening chapter from my most recent book called Tomorrow Detective. And in it, we meet a character who will become an important element in my detective's backstory. So it's just setting a scene. He is in a time traveling inn. When we meet him. Cassius, 1984, 15 minutes after midnight. Cassius Roseland sat on the edge of his bar stool, unable to ignore the knot in his stomach. He looked at his hands instead. They hadn't come clean. The deepest creases of his knuckles revealed the dirt. It was under his nails, too. Maybe that was a good thing. Might have stopped some of the blood from getting under there. But he could still smell it. The weight of the .45 in his waistband made his pants heavy. He put a hand to the fold of his shirt, covering the gun. He should have gotten rid of it by now, but he didn't know what new danger might be coming for him. He'd need something to protect himself. His hand was still shaking. He tried putting it in his sweatshirt pocket, but recoiled at the cold metal still in there. The watch. You decide what you're having? The bartender was back, the knockout blonde with the kind eyes. A rum and coke? She nodded and reached for a glass. At least they had Coke here. Hard to tell since the place looked like Sherlock Holmes might walk in any minute. Maybe Robin Hood. Bunch of old wood and antique glass. Tough to put a time to any of it. Maybe that was the point. A signed baseball sat on the shelf behind the bar, though. That was something. There was a band in the corner, two girls plucking away at guitars and a twiggy little dude on a keyboard. Music was pretty out there. The girls were singing to each other like they needed to get a room. Cassius checked his watch again. Where the hell was she? He reached into his rear pants pocket and felt the code cards, his ticket out. This would all be for nothing if he hadn't kept those. He scanned the half-filled pub. No one was looking at him now, but they were when he wasn't watching. He could feel it. Did they know what he'd done? Maybe they could tell. Maybe they could smell the blood too. But no one was saying anything. A little longer and he'd be free. The bartender pushed his drink toward him. Are you a new guest? Yeah, Cassius replied. When do we leave? Ian just got here. Have to wait for all the guests to check in. So, like an hour or what? In a rush for your vacation? Starts with relaxing, you know. Cassius unclenched his fist and reached for the drink. His hand still trembled, but not so bad. You're right. Just got to get that chill attitude, huh? The bartender moved off to help another guest, but her green eyes had lingered on his for too long, hadn't they? How could she know? He looked himself over again. Just his fresh black jeans, tee, and his lucky sleeveless fight hoodie. He was clean enough, but that's when he spotted the flecks of blood on his shoes. He spilled some of the drink on himself. Shit, he muttered as he reached for some napkins. Someone came in the door as he was wiping his Converse and he started again, but it was just a short Latin guy with a mustache he'd met in the hall. He needed to calm down. Everything was fine. In a few minutes, she'd be here. Then this place would vanish like he'd seen it arrive. They'd be safe from Mickey, safe from the cops, far away from... The door opened again. The figure stepped through and his heart sank. Kid was still wearing the same jacket, now bloodstained and filthy. He was just a skinny teenager and looked it even more in this light. Needed 20 pounds to make middleweight. But the night had aged him. He had blood in his hair. Nothing about those blue eyes looked like a kid anymore. All ice. Hate, too. Cassius slid his hand to his waist and up under his sweatshirt, his fingers wrapped around the grip of the 45. How'd this kid find him? The hell was he doing here? The room grew quiet, all eyes fixed on the two of them. Couldn't he have left it alone, just for tonight? But the question rang false in Cassius's brain. He knew why he'd come, what it must mean about the girl from the sidewalk. If someone had done what he'd done, he'd follow them to the end of the earth, too. This was it. He never should have taken this job, never should have gotten in the car tonight. For sure never should have done what he did to that girl, but now what's done was done. The kid had both hands in his jacket pockets. What did he have in there? It didn't matter. He was what, 16, 17? Cassius had 10 years on him. He'd stared down plenty of tougher punks in the ring over the years. Kid would back down for sure if he saw the 45 again. What was he going to do, shout at him in front of all these people? That's not how it was done. He'd back down. But there went his way out. Could that pretty blonde see to letting him stay after running some kid off with a gun? She'd have to. He'd make her. It was the only way. At least the kid hadn't brought any cops. His mistake. Cassius slid off his stool. Dumb kid was just standing there, staring him down. You don't want none of this, Cassius said. Get gone. But the kid didn't blink. He took two steps closer instead and squared up, maybe 10 feet between them now. Cassius set his jaw. Blood was pounding in his ears. Had his adrenaline ever come down tonight? He'd keep his finger off the trigger this time. Just a little show. I said get out, he shouted, and yanked the 45 loose from his waistband. The pinch came at the same time as the pop, twisting him off balance. But it was the second shot that he saw. Stuffing from inside that jacket flew out. Kid had blown a hole clean through his pocket. Cassius looked down. Second thump. That had hurt more. Was this what that girl had felt? He staggered backward, hit the stool. Shit. He sat. The 45 fell from his hand and clattered to the floor. What a dumb thing to do. Cassius felt the urge to apologize to the rest of the pub. He reached for the gun, but lost his footing. He hit the floor with his knees, then his face. He felt his nose break. Someone kicked the gun away from his fingertips, shouting. He rolled over. The kid loomed over him, the gun in plain sight now. He bent and picked up something off the floor. That damned watch. This isn't yours. Cassius let his head fall back. Blood from his nose was getting in his mouth. Here came that blonde again, leaning over him. She had a towel and blood on her hands, his blood. But it wasn't from his face. He stared up at the wooden beams of the ceiling. He would have really liked to see it all disappear like they said it would. That would have been some vacation.
Ooh! And the whole time you were reading it, I was imagining him as you. Just the outfit he was wearing. I was like, how perfect. Converse. It's like Nathan going through, well, the jeans and the t-shirt and the hoodie. I was like, flight hoodie and like him, Nathan going through all these experiences. That was awesome. I'm so in it. Like, I'm just like, you're such a visual writer.
I had a lot of fun.
I mean, I literally tasted the blood in my mouth.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, I had fun with that scene, and it sets up a lot. It's the kid that walks through the door, ends up being my detective later on in life,
and so it's a very,
it's a tangled, interesting story. And there's, you know, it's time travel, so there's a lot that goes on. But it's an interesting story about, you know, redemption and kind of, you know, living down things we've done in our past. And I had a really good time writing it.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much. Thank you for once again, always showing up when I need you to show up. Can you do anytime. This? Sure. I'm here for you. So, and I'm so excited to read this. What is this? Your 750,000th book? Just kidding.
I'm just going to keep doing
it. I love it, though. Writing. And you have two small children, and you're like in it, and you're a great husband, and you've got the job. So you really are doing it all. So it's really great. I love seeing, we'll see Instagram videos of Nathan and his daughter in the air on his plane flying. So you have a lovely life. And I'm really glad that the aviation is coming into your books and stories. So I'm really curious to see. And I love that you're featuring Albert Woodard Airport, which is right here in St. Pete. So
yeah, I love our airport, and I love our writer community. So I really appreciate these moments where I get to connect with you and stay in touch with other writers in the community. This is great.
Well, thanks for being our ride or die. And thank you everyone for tuning in to Typewriter Talks. We'll be back next week with another author or poet telling you about their writing process. And if you want to learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit, you can go to keepstpetelit.org. So thank you, everyone. And please remember to read and write on.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDole, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.